Hey guys, if you want updates on our latest episodes, then be sure to subscribe to the Film Colossus podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Also, if you'd like to support the show and hear episodes ad-free, then subscribe to our Patreon page at patreon.com/filmcolossus.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
My name is Chris Lambert.
And my name is Travis Bean. And on today's episode, we navigate through the insane terrain of Oliver Stone's masterpiece, Any Given Sunday. We observe how perhaps the greatest football movie ever made actually serves as a metaphor for America's story, for the angst and isolation that results from generational differences and constant change.
Hut, hut, hike!
Chris, I know you're a fan of what they call overseas football. I know you played a little soccer in your day, but did you ever actually play the American version of football?
No, otherwise I would have known to do something like red 82, blue 74, Bronco, or, Bronco. Hey,
red 666.
Oh yeah, red 666. No, you know, I wanted to. I used to play backyard football with my friends a lot. Mm. And I played Madden all the time, like starting with Madden 94 as a kid. Loved the Madden games.
Did you play Backyard Football, the spinoff of the Backyard Baseball franchise?
I never played either of the Backyard video games.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I know. I know people have a soft spot for Backyard Baseball.
I had football as well, so I enjoyed them both.
You know, I never played peewee football despite really liking it because I was always playing soccer around the same time. Though I had friends that did both, I think. Maybe my parents, they never expressed any concerns over me playing football. But in middle school, I actually went to join the football team. Uh-huh. You were supposed to show up at 11 a.m. on a Saturday or something. And my mom dropped me off. And I started walking to the front door, and I got to the front door and got really nervous and turned around, like the front door of the, like yeah, the annex, the weightlifting room where you're supposed to yeah meet. And I turned around and got back in the car and went home. So
fair enough.
Yeah. I don't know what it was that day. Like middle school me was like a little roly-poly kid.
Yeah.
So
there's a place for you as a roly-poly kid on a football team.
I know. But I was like worried about the locker room. I was still the kid at that point that would swim with my t-shirt on.
Yeah, right.
So
you're
still that kid. Well, that's
great. It's like seeing a unicorn when you see somebody with like a shirt on in the water.
And I would wear a football jersey, ironically.
I would always wear a
Randy Moss jersey, a Jerry Rice jersey, Barry Sanders jersey. So yeah, I got nervous about it and ran away.
I played flag football in grade school. I've never been much of a football guy. Like I don't even really like, I don't like watching football that much. but I did play flag football in grade school, and I think I was notoriously like the worst person on the team pretty much every time I played a sport besides tennis. and that included my grade school flag football team. I was always just on the line. And you play in fourth and fifth grade. I think I went 2 years without doing anything of significance ever whatsoever. But once there was a game where like some kid was about to run in and score a touchdown that either would have put them ahead or tied. And we were the grade school that was undefeated. Like we won every single game. So like, and I just like the only time I ever did anything is I got this kid's flag as he was like running by and everyone like dogpiled me. And it was a big moment for me.
That's awesome. That would have been a very special, like, you went out at your peak, your flag football peak.
Yeah. Yeah. If your question is that didn't give me the confidence to excel at all other sports, no, it did not. It was a momentary lapse.
Did it make you a sycophant for attention?
No, it probably got me a couple pats on the back and maybe a free ice cream cone that night, but that's about it.
Yeah. The ice cream cone for like the MVP, whenever coaches would take us for ice cream after like games and stuff, that was always the best.
It's always a tricky proposition though. Like I worked at the newspaper at my college, so Southern Illinois University, and the teacher beginning of each week would like highlight somebody that did well, and like it was just like a slow painful torture that like you weren't being called like throughout the year. I think he made a point of like getting everybody, but sometimes, you know, you would go a few weeks without recognition, and that's tough to do to kids.
Yeah, you're like, please. I mean, I was the kid that was always trying to answer all the questions in class and raise my hand, right. And teachers would stop calling on me, and that always hurt.
You're like the Hermione of your class.
I kind of was, just way more annoying, I guess.
And Professor Snape's just sitting up there trying to ignore you.
Yeah, they were all pretty Snape-y to me.
I agree. Every teacher I ever had was Snape-like.
Yeah, it just left a lot to be desired.
You had a few McGonagalls in there, and they were nice.
Yeah, but for the most part. I remember one time I was in the office, like, standing at the counter, and there was a phone, like, that people would use to call home if you were sick or whatever, and a teacher walked in as I was waiting. So, like, I was already standing there, and she walks up to the phone and makes a call, and this is my fourth grade science teacher, Mrs. Osugi, and she's, like, on the phone, and she just goes, I'm really, like, it's one more year, and then I'm done, and I can't wait to be done. And just, like, bitching to her husband about, like, teaching us. And she looks down at me and goes, excuse me, this is a private conversation.
Wow.
Because I was, I guess, within arm's length of her. And it's like,
your private conversation's about to go public.
Yeah, I'm going to tell everybody. I'm going to... this whole school's gonna know.
You show your little recorder that you got from the Home Alone franchise.
Look at this, Mrs. Osugi. Okay, so any given Sunday, we both have limited football experience.
Yeah, and I don't even like watching football, so this will be a great episode.
Yeah, I like watching football, but I'm a Cleveland sports fan, so I actually hate watching football.
I was going to say that I feel like that's partly why you love this movie, because Jim Brown makes a few appearances in it.
He does make a few appearances in it. You know, everybody from Cleveland's like very pro Jim Brown, though a bunch of like bad stuff came out in recent years about Jim Brown.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
Yeah, I didn't look deeply into it, but it seemed like he had a pretty rough private life in terms of how he was treating people.
Yeah, it's hard to become that good at something and not turn into a monster. It happens to tons of people.
It seems that there really is like correlation between those two things. So I've never had like that big of a soft spot since I was too young to grow up watching. I kind of feel a little bit like Willie Beeman, where it's just like those old guys, I don't care about like I don't care about them. I care about, like, my time.
Sure.
So there's a little bit of, like, oh, it's Jim Brown, but not, like, that's our guy.
Yeah. You're more of a... I think you relate to Willie Beeman in more ways than one. He very much has Chris energy.
There is some Chris energy, but also his descent into arrogance is so frustrating.
Very Chris. Oh, right. Yeah. Sorry. How dare you?
How dare you? You say that kind of thing to me on my podcast? Yeah.
I mean, you can be, you're definitely a Willie Beeman. I'm more of like whoever Aaron Eckhart's character is. Like,
yeah. Just like, I want to be Matthew the head Modine. Coach. Yeah. Matthew Modine. I can see you as Matthew Modine.
Just like all these people, or Elizabeth Berkeley, just like one of the three people I like from 90s movies.
Yeah. Yeah, let's say you're the Elizabeth Berkeley of this movie.
I like that.
Have you watched a lot of other Oliver Stone movies?
Yeah, I think I've seen. It's funny because he's not a director I would say I'm like super passionate about, but I feel like I've seen a good amount of his movies. Let's see. I can. This is the beauty of Letterboxd, by the way. They make it very easy to like see the movies you've seen from a given director or whatever. Let's see. Oliver Stone. Let's see what we got. I've never seen Natural Born Killers, actually. I've seen enough of it like on TV that I know what it's like. But, okay, let's see. Well, maybe not as many as I thought. I've seen Platoon. I've seen Wall Street. I've seen Wall Street 2, Money Never Sleeps. I've seen W. Gosh, that's about it. I thought I'd seen a lot more than that.
You never saw Savages?
I haven't, no.
Feels like such a Travis movie.
It's a movie. It's always been kind of like, oh, I should watch that.
Yeah, I hated it.
Yeah, it doesn't strike me as a Chris kind of movie.
I was excited about it. The commercials I thought were like pretty good, or the trailer was pretty good, and then the movie itself was.
But it looks like
frustrating.
It looks bad in quotes. You know, like yeah. Like that kind. The movie of that kind of energy is all I'm saying. Like I feel like Chris doesn't like this.
Chris is not a fan. I didn't like Platoon.
Saw it a long time ago, and I guess I remember enjoying it, but I couldn't give an honest opinion about it.
Yeah, I felt the same way about it as I did Heat, where it's like, I bet if I watched this in the day that it came out, or like the decade it came out, I would have liked it a lot more. But at this point, Platoon felt so by the numbers, because so many movies have used a similar blueprint, that it felt unoriginal to me, even if it was ahead of the curve back then, to the point where like all the dramatic stuff happened and the big scene where the guy like has his hands in the air.
Yeah.
It just felt absolutely nothing towards it.
I am looking at his filmography and I'm realizing that a lot of what I know his work from, because maybe I haven't seen a lot of his movies, but I feel like I've seen enough of parts of his movies. Because I feel like Oliver Stone's aesthetic was influential in like very 90s. So maybe from like, you know, Natural Born Killers, The Doors, Born on 4th of July, like this whole period where his movies start getting a similar aesthetic that feels very kinetic and has a lot of momentum. I feel like I know that a little bit more, and I think because of that, like, I feel like I just understand his aesthetic a little more than I just, like, know his movies outright. So I've never seen The Doors. I've never seen Natural Born Killers. But, like, I've seen several scenes from that movie, I feel like, that when I watch something like Any Given Sunday, I'm like, oh, I kind of understand, like, what he's going for and what his whole, like, what he's trying to visualize, what he's saying and all that.
And there's a very collage style.
Mm-hmm.
To his filmmaking, which, you know, we were talking before we started recording about like art museum films, mm-hmm. and really like true art films, experimental films.
That's the kinds of conversations we have off air.
Yeah. Just if you want to know how
experimental,
you know,
film that you see at art museums,
highbrow we are and intellectually proud.
Yeah. Especially since that conversation consisted of us going like, I don't get it.
Yeah, right. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, what is it, Instagram versus reality? It's like, on the podcast we talk about how we talked about experimental films at art museums and behind the scenes, it's just like, we don't really like those, do we? Huh, they're
that's weird.
Yeah. But it's a very collage style that I feel like kind of has a foot in that realm of, if you saw it in a in a museum, in an art installation, you'd be like, yeah, this feels like an art installation film.
I mean, a lot of his movies do feel like that. It's interesting, like, you know, when I watch movies, the first thing I'm really looking for, not to sound like too pretentious, but like, you know, when I'm watching a movie, I'm looking to make some sort of connection, and I want it to have an impact on me, no matter how like silly or inane the movie might seem. Like, I'm looking to be impacted by it. And as I'm watching Any Given Sunday, like, I do, you know, at first you're kind of like, you feel a little assaulted by it. Like, it's so kinetic and constant that you're like, you kind of have to find your footing with it at first. But I did start to appreciate that collage style type of filmmaking and realizing like what it has to say on just a deeper emotional kind of intellectual level, like what the series of images ultimately says about these people who are playing this sport. And that's just an interesting aspect of his aesthetic where, you know, we're talking about experimental films and in theaters, a lot of times an experimental film is just meant to convey a very specific emotion and is meant to just bring a sense, a visual sense to something that it's just felt within. It's what makes experimental films so difficult to engage with and like get into. But I feel like you are seeing that on a level here of Any Given Sunday. Like it is, it's just in the plainest sense, it's meant to create a sense of being a part of this football team and what it's like to be in a football game and what it's like to like work together on something. Like there's something more universal and profound about its insights that stem from these kind of surface level things we can see, like collage style, football, like what is it really getting at? And I think the more and more you watch this movie, it just kind of reveals itself and the bigger idea things it's getting into.
It definitely has a lot of bigger idea things that it's getting into. Before diving in,
yeah.
I feel like Natural Born Killers, I started a few years ago and never finished, like back in like the Netflix send you a DVD era. And then Savages, that's it. I've never seen Wall Street or Wall Street
really?
2. I've never seen JFK. I've always meant to watch Alexander, the director's cut, because people talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
One day.
Yeah, Wall Street's, you know, it's, I think that existed even before Platoon maybe, or right around the same time. Like, the way I think of Oliver Stone is kind of more of the Any Given Sunday. Like, even though I haven't seen many of those movies, like, I know what Natural Born Killers is like. That, to me, reminds me of Any Given Sunday and just how electric it is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Any Given Sunday, this is your first watch. This is my like fourth watch.
Okay.
I first saw it, I think back in college, and I liked it, but it was also like, that's a weird movie. Like that's a weird movie.
What compelled you to watch this movie?
It was on TV.
Okay.
I remember I had like a little TV in my dorm, and there was one night it was just on TV and I was going to go do something. And I kept watching it and ended up just not going out that night because I wanted to see what happened in this movie. It was
that
very
kind of movie.
Yeah, it kind of just like caught me up in what was going on and the style of it and everything. And then I rewatched it after college. I think it was maybe around like right before I got to Iowa. And on the rewatch, I was just like, this thing's a masterpiece, isn't it? So for the last 10 years, so maybe this is like time number 3 or 4. I've been operating with this as like, to me, kind of not a masterpiece, I think at this point, but like a very, very, very good film that's saying a lot and doing a lot through its aesthetic, through its story. That has a lot of layers that go beyond just like football, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
That make it, I think, really fascinating. So it was nice to have to watch it again and come away with that, having that depth that I thought it had and remember it having, and still feeling like there's more things in there that even on my third or fourth watch, that I'm like, there's a kernel there that I still have it fully like picked apart or popped into mm-hmm. popcorn. I don't know what the extended metaphor is there, but there are big ideas that I feel pretty like good about, but there's still some little nuances in there that I'm like, this is still saying more than what I've even picked up on at this point. So there was a bit more appreciation on this watch. But also in some ways, it didn't quite strike me as like the masterpiece that I thought it was, you know, 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that happens with movies all the time. Like they hit you in the right moments and speak to you in some way. But what's funny is, like, I feel like this movie speaks to me in the moment I'm in right now. It's, again, as somebody who doesn't really, this is such a pretentious thing I'm about to say, but it's true, and it's the best way I can describe it. Like, I'm not super interested in, like, the aesthetic of football. Like, I don't find it a visually pleasing sport. Like, sometimes I find it kind of boring, and the point of it is, like, less interesting to me than, like, say, a baseball game, which is a sport everybody thinks is boring, or, like, a tennis match, another sport everyone doesn't like to watch. There's something about the energy of that kind of sport that I get into a little bit more, that I've always found football really tough to penetrate. I kind of like watching it with groups of people. Like, that's always fun, but I've never been able to just, like, sit down and watch football. With that said, though, I did enjoy watching this movie, and my wife had a comment of, like, this is the most interested in football I've ever been, you know? just the kind of, like, those fucking beautiful shots. It happens a few times in this movie where, you know, Willie throws the ball and you're just, like, watching the ball spiral towards the camera.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like I've never seen that before. It's, like, slowed down like that. It was just so pretty. But there were just so many moments like that where, like, I'm way into it. But beyond that, it kind of made me appreciate the aesthetic, you know, the point of football a little bit more, in the sense that, like any sport, it is just a group of people trying to achieve something singular, all pushing forward and relying on each other. So obviously the script and the characters, they all convey that. But to me, more what this movie's about is the way it's conveyed visually, and how Oliver Stone's aesthetic, the way he's kind of maneuvering these games, the way it's really pronouncing all of these relationships and dynamics we've gotten to know and understand, and how it's, like, actually adding to that and strengthening those things. And it spoke to me in that sense, because, like, to me, the movie, then you can kind of blow it up to a larger level. Like, it's not just football. Like, you know, you do this with your family unit, you do it with any cause or ideology you're a part of that you're pushing and, like, trying to make known. It's very applicable that way into me. And I saw the universality of it as I was, like, into, you know, the actual style of filmmaking that was going on.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that jumps out to me is it almost feels like Oliver Stone, he's such a political filmmaker.
Yeah, right.
That it almost feels, it doesn't even almost feel, I really think he's making a commentary on America itself through football.
Right.
Which is really fascinating in terms of, like, race dynamics, changes in culture, like shifts in like old versus new mentalities that go into not just, like, the team sport, but the country as a whole. That's really fascinating to me for this movie to kind of operate on that conversation between the present and the historical, especially in the way that you get the flashbacks to older players, the crowd. I laugh so hard and find it's such an amazing bit of dialogue when Al Pacino's trying to talk to Willie about his dad. And he's just like, you know, if you ever want to talk about, like, losing somebody, you know, I lost my dad, World War II.
Yeah.
And it's just like the divide between Al Pacino's character losing a parent in World War II.
Yeah.
Versus Willie Beeman and everything he's about with his CD player and style and the music he listens to, trying to talk about jazz versus hip hop. Right. There's such, like, a cultural clash between the two of them that feels very much like a reckoning of baby boomers and whatever was before Gen X with Gen X, like, and Gen Y.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're totally right that knowing that about Oliver Stone does improve your insight into something like that, but he's not exactly hiding it in parts of the movie either. Like, Willie Beeman's pretty open about
race and football. There's a whole speech.
Yeah, like, it's a part of the movie enough where, like, you can see that it is bigger than football. It's about, you know, and you're pointing it out, like, having all of these different generations, like, that's such a pronounced theme of the movie. You know, these different generations kind of clashing to still... That's just reflective of real life. People from different generations might have different goals or ideologies about how to get somewhere, but we all know where we want to get. Like,
yeah,
we want to improve. We want to get better. So it is like, it does feel like an encapsulation of that struggle, like a visualization of it through football, which is badass. And like, it's football. So like, everyone has one goal on a football team. Like, you want to win. You want to drive down the field and get into the end zone. It's just really cool how that all kind of coalesces without, despite like the themes being very apparent and kind of outrightly stated, it isn't necessarily obvious that the movie's doing that, you know? Like, it's just part of it.
Yeah. And there's a lot of it going on, like with Beeman's character and even with Pacino being a foil, is we're talking with like the country aspect or the historical versus the present or the past versus the present. There's a whole personal level to his journey. There's something about him rediscovering his spark and his fire in the modern times and what's it mean to kind of catch up to that when the systems around you feel like they're like throttling you. Mm-hmm. And it's very fascinating to me, all of the nuance of that and the navigation of that and the characters throughout them. Like, I love so many of the characters in this movie and how developed they are. It's a long ass movie, which I know you tend to prefer shorter movies these days. But I, like, as I was watching, I was just like, Travis has to be loving. I sent you that text at like 4 in the morning that was like, you have to love, I refuse to believe you wouldn't love every single like minute of the style of this movie, the characterization, like the fact that Cameron Diaz's character has such an arc in this movie, where I feel like in any other movie by any other filmmaker that's just like your typical 90 minutes or even 2 hours, her character has so much less to do and is underwritten, underdeveloped, where a film like this under Stone with this runtime really gives her character an importance and a heft and a weight.
Right.
That's really necessary in terms of just the foil between her and, you know, Tony and Willie.
Yeah.
Which I love.
Yeah. I mean, it's not necessarily that I enjoy a shorter movie more. Like, I just think there's a correlation here that I appreciate efficiency in a movie, and a shorter movie is more likely to be efficient. Like, it's tough to be efficient in a long movie and to convey a lot of information without feeling like you're being indulgent or lingering on something unnecessary that isn't contributing to like what's important. I don't think that's the case in this movie. Like, that's much more what I'm concerned about is, like, if you're 2 hours and 40 minutes long, like, how do you say smart things the entire time? You know, how do you keep me interested the entire time? Because it's one thing to like have a well-written character, like technically maybe Cameron Diaz's character could have everything on the script on page that like develops her character well, and like there's enough information there, she has enough of the running time there for her character to be technically developed. But if the movie's boring, if the actress is bad, you know, there are all these things that can happen that can disrupt the moment. Again, it's all part of the aesthetic. It's being able to visually capture your ideas and convey them in a way that like arrests me and like sucks me into what's happening. That's my whole point about not to keep shitting on Damien Chazelle, but it seems like I have to do it once an episode. And our discussion of whether or not like Margot Robbie deserves an Oscar nomination for her role in the movie, like the only reason I can't get behind something like that is like I don't think her character is well done. Like I think the movie like has so many lapses and so many redundant things happen and uninteresting bits of insight that like to me that all contributes to like how good of a character I think she's actually playing. Like so when you look at something like Inavian Sunday and I'm looking at Cameron Diaz, like the way Oliver Stone is capturing this football team and where they are all heading together as a unit, and then within that what role Cameron Diaz's character plays, how is her character developed, and B, like what does it say in relation to literally everybody else? Like all that stuff needs to be working at all times. And it doesn't help that like you never get, or I don't anyway, ever get sick of Stone's aesthetic, his like fucking 100 mile an hour out of control like movement forward. Like it all to me is always working, so that helps with the character. And that's usually the problem I have with longer movies, is like they rarely can sustain me as long as this movie does.
Yeah, and this movie does do that.
Yeah, completely. It's, I mean, and that's tough to accomplish. Like, it never feels boring to me, you know?
No, I love, it's one of my favorite scenes. I always remember it being, like, a little more towards, like, the end, but it's very much in the middle or even, like, first third. But when Willie goes over to Tony's house for dinner, which, was that even dinner? Lunch? For a meal.
The jambalaya.
Yeah, the jambalaya. And that conversation, that whole ideological conversation with the filmmaking at that point, and the edits, the cuts, the gladiator stuff that's going on the whole time that they're talking.
So cool.
It's so cool. That's when I was watching, I was like, there's no way that Travis doesn't just watch this and go like, yes, yes, hell yeah, yes, like thank it. You.
For sure. There's also just like this, it's funny, this came out in 1999, which is the year Magnolia came out, and like probably the movie it most reminded me of.
Oh yeah.
And there's just like a lot of movies had this kind of feel back then, and again it's a lost art to to be that electric with your storytelling. Like if you have lots of characters, like having a sense of like it's important to like have music constantly playing underneath and to have like edits and like weird little visual montages thrown together over people speaking. Like it's kind of a lost art that was such more of a thing back in 1999.
Yeah. Just the little, it strikes me as almost a little more novel-y. I don't want to say literary, cause I feel like literary maybe sounds the wrong way with it, but it definitely has some of the interiority that a novel has, or the ability to use metaphor in a way a novel has, where you can use like and as in a film, which you don't get a lot of that because the film is just showing you an objective thing, unless it's cutting to something or being kind of goofy or cute with it. So a lot of the times that a film can be more like literary in quotes by using visual metaphors, it's something in like Scott Pilgrim where it's such an intrusion from the singular character's point of view rather than something that's a little more from an objective narrator or objective speaker. You have to like go the route of Fight Club to make that happen. I feel recently the only recent movie I've seen that did that was Lucy.
I've always wanted to rewatch Lucy.
I hated it, but I liked that. The story was really bad to me, but it's the filmmaking aspect and the way in which it used these visual cut-ins to create metaphors throughout was very fascinating. But yeah, you don't get that much of that anymore.
Luc Besson, that just seems more of his like tendency. I do think of someone like Gaspar Noé, who like maybe not specifically what you're describing, like these things that serve as like obvious visual metaphors, but his movies always have a certain consistency to them, like a certain gimmick that he has going that is like, oh, this means this, by the way. Like all of, God, what was the movie he just did that, I don't know why I'm blanking, Vortex, where the whole movie is just split screen. the entire movie, and like you're just following like this old man in his life and this old woman in her life, and like the woman's like slowly losing her mind and the guy's like trying to like hang on to his career and like make a statement. Like the parallels are kind of obvious in a sense, but also I guess I find that exciting. Like I guess stuff can be like too obvious in a boring way, but it's your ability to like take that whatever gimmick you're using and build on it and say something smart with it, which, you know, that's what a lot of those film kind of filmmakers do really well. And obviously Elverstone did it really well here.
Yeah. Like fantastic use of style throughout the film. And then I always forget whenever I go back to it, just how much time is given to each of the characters.
Yeah.
And how good the arcs are. I just James Woods and Matthew Modine having like a whole mini movie between them is really fascinating. And that shot of Matthew Modine near the end where you see him talking to the cheerleader.
I know. Lauren, my wife, pointed that out and I was like, I don't even remember that happening, but I was like, that makes sense and that's funny to me.
Yeah, it's just like a quick moment during the playoff game where he finally gives the shots to Shark when Shark's just like, can I have this? He's like, you don't need it. And he's like, you know, give it to me.
Yeah.
And then shortly after that, you see Modine's character talking with one of the cheerleaders, just being the new James Woods.
Tisk, tisk, tisk.
I know. He was so high and mighty. And then that's one of my favorite parts of this movie. But even the fact that like Lawrence Taylor, would you know that that's actually like NFL Hall of Famer Lawrence Taylor playing Shark, the best defensive player ever at the point that he was playing.
Again, I know very little about football. I don't never even heard of this guy.
Oh, he was, if you go to YouTube and you look up Lawrence Taylor highlights, he was a fucking monster. He just was one of the best players of all time and completely changed how defense is played in the NFL.
He's a good actor too.
That was his first time acting.
Yeah, I enjoyed him.
He does such a good job, which
I
also
forgot about.
It does feel
very honest, like he's not necessarily somebody trained in acting, that kind of acting, you know.
Right. But he still manages to have like the mood shifts between scenes. You see some, like especially in sports movies, you see some people come in for a line and they're just like, "Hey, kid."
Oh yeah.
Maybe better luck next time. And you're like, okay, Brett Favre. Yeah. Why is that the name that I went with?
Tom Brady was in 80 for Brady, and he had a moment like that.
Yeah, where it's just, like, painful. And Lawrence Taylor is, like, doing stuff. Like, he is good in this.
Yeah, it feels honest.
Yeah. I mean, just the dynamics with, like, LL Cool J and Willie. I think the one thing that was kind of, like, it's just a little weak to me is the time frame over which like this takes place. And they get into it a little bit with Beeman, where he was going to be a top draft pick, had some issues that caused him to fall, then had a shoulder injury. So he's been steaming in the way that he's been angry about what's happened to his career for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't invoke, but that explains some of why he's so egotistical and entitled so quickly, because he felt like he was owed this for so long and that this should have been his life the entire time. But it is funny that he goes from just like, not quite aw shucks, but I'm going to throw up on the field. Like I'm an okay.
The best runner in this movie.
Yeah, down to earth guy to just being a complete arrogant monster in the course of 3 weeks.
Yeah,
that's like, great. There's
him throwing that time up just make cracking me up.
Yeah, the throwing up with over the course of the movie again and again was funny. I do have to suspend a little bit of disbelief in the fact that like things move that quickly with him, but that also I think is probably part of the commentary as well that these things can move quickly and you really see the way in which people change fast when they get this attention and this notoriety and the way in which it just kind of hits them and affects them.
I mean, you definitely have to suspend your disbelief because only four games go by at the end of the season. Like, he's on the cover of a bunch of magazines. Like, it doesn't go that quick. But yeah, I think him, because as you noted, like, everybody in this movie gets so much time, there isn't necessarily a main character, but he is kind of the piece guiding, in my mind, a lot of the movie. And the movie ends with him just standing there all alone. And I thought that was a really powerful moment. It reminded me of, I feel like we've talked about this a little bit, and I take any chance I can get to highlight Westerns on this show and anywhere I'm taking up space, and how much I enjoy the aesthetic of a Western and the isolation it depicts, the lonesomeness, and how that's how similar that feels to just growing up in America, in a world, in this world, in any society, like this big push we all have together towards building something, like you are just by yourself and you could often feel isolated and like unheard and unsure of yourself and not sure how you're contributing or where you're going to go. And I feel like his presence really conveys that really well as somebody who, you know, does have a chip on his shoulder, that feels behind, that feels he's owed. Like, I can see a lot of the energies I see and just the anxieties you see in people every day and like trying to make it in this world and to have an impact. Like, he just kind of exudes that. He just basically becomes like the common man in a way in this movie. And he has his moment, and this moment at the end where he's kind of alone and he's like, the doctor said like my shoulder is separated, and he turns around and no one's there. Like, to me, that was such a specific feeling it was evoking and speaking to this feeling we can all share, and feeling like you don't know which way is forward, you don't know what's next, and how scary that is. And it's, again, that is just part of the movie's aesthetic. Like, all of these people working together towards something, like every individual person is occupied by that specific feeling at some point, you know?
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And the fact of there's something very fascinating about the tension there, because you need all these people to work together to accomplish something, whether it's on the football team or in a company, in a family, in a country, right? Mm-hmm. But as much as everybody was preaching about buying in and taking that inch, like every inch, and knowing that the people around you are also going to fight for that inch, at the end, after Beeman has like bought in, made himself vulnerable, and really feels connected to Tony and the team and everything, that moment where he is left alone almost speaks to the fact of how much the machine does use these people and spit them out, whether it's intentional or not. I mean, we saw with Shark, we saw with Cap, that it's often intentional the way in which they spit them out. So it wasn't quite that way with Beeman at the end. But there's still something there about, like, he had this time to shine and bright, but already he's having this hesitation. He's having this injury. He might not reach that same height again because his shoulder's still damaged. Is he going to continue to play at a high level? And what will the machine do to him when he no longer is Steamin' Willie Beeman?
Yeah.
It's a very full moment, because there are the positives of it, but then also the fears of it, then like the glass half empty view of it. I love that the movie builds to that and like concludes in quotes there. You saw mm-hmm. the scenes in the credits, right?
Of course I did.
Okay.
Which I thought was an interesting twist to it, that like it kind of continued the narrative in a way like that Pacino, this older generation who's on his way out, is suddenly connecting with Willie Beeman and is going to help him propel forward. That I feel like there's some sort of commentary there of like, you know, we can work together, we can do it.
Yeah, that they're like, they managed to find the common ground that they needed, and he's going to go be in this expansion team and Beeman's going to be a starting quarterback. The last time I saw the movie, I did come away with like a little more of a glass half empty view of the end, because the last thing we do hear Willie say is that his shoulder's bothering him.
Right.
And then they get crushed in the championship game.
Yeah.
Not like the actual Pantheon Bowl game, but the division championship. So it makes you wonder how healthy is Willie's shoulder going to be? Which also means how successful is Pacino going to be in New Mexico. And it makes you wonder, is there a little bit of a bittersweet or even tragic quality to that ending, where he thinks he's coming out on top and he thinks he's going to go have this like bold next chapter, but we know that he might not be up for it and that Beeman's shoulder might not be up for it. And if you're viewing that in that like glass half empty view, what's that say?
Right.
Versus the glass half full view of, you know, they connected, they're going on to this next thing, and like, good for them.
Yeah, I feel like it's just my reading of it was, it's almost beyond any of that. Like, it's not even a half full, half empty kind of thing. It's like, you got a fucking glass and you got to fill it up. Like, like, it's, to me, this movie. And maybe this actually speaks to why the really short time frame helps ultimately what it's saying, helps its commentary, that it's capturing a very specific moment in these people's lives and something like very specific. It doesn't matter that we don't need to see any more games after the last game we saw, because that was the important game. Like, they finally learned to work together. Like, something was achieved, like a catharsis was achieved in this moment. But it's also just one moment. After this moment's done, time to step forward and start the next one. Like, it's reflective of life in that way, and how you just kind of piece it together. And like, it's always tough. Doesn't matter if your shoulder hurts, like that was then, like now you have to move forward and like figure out your shoulder. It's so, I guess, like, I definitely don't view it as a glass half empty kind of thing, of more of just, this is the next step. You know, I feel like that's just something you have to learn about life, that I feel like I've come to understand a little bit more lately, like, especially with having a kid and feeling like you don't have any time to do anything. Like, well, that's kind of how it is. Like, you don't have time to do everything, and like, shit rarely goes the way you want it to. But the important thing is that, like, you keep moving forward and you keep trying to achieve something bigger than yourself, you know?
Yeah. Oh, 1,000%. Circumstances are never going to be perfect.
Yeah.
Did you gasp when Cap's wife smacked him?
Oh, yeah. That was, you know, yeah, I did. I had an audible gasp, and the neighbor called to make sure I was okay. I was very surprised by that moment, though, because, like, I did kind of, like, I might have been, like, open-jawed, like, whoa, like, less of like that she smacked him, but more of like, man, like, does this woman have like an ounce of love for this man? Like, I'm sitting here like, I had to like rack my brain in the movie and be like, have they had a good relationship? I'm like, I feel like they've had a nice loving relationship, but like in this moment, this woman feels like a cold, ruthless, like she doesn't feel like she cares about this guy at all. And I just found that moment very shocking.
Yeah. I mean, I really like what they do with Cap's character, in the sense that he's very much this, you know, all-American, prototypical character, like what right. you think about when you think he's about a quarterback. Like a quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah.
And to have him really represent that old guard that goes out, but also wrestling with his own masculinity in that way. Mm-hmm. What's it mean that he has to get up, that they won't bring the stretcher for him when he has a back injury because he'll look like a pussy? Like,
yeah,
the fact that he has to struggle up because he's baited into that, and how that's not good for him, the way that he rushes back because everybody's gassing him up, and that conversation where he tries to retire and Tony won't let him,
yeah,
is so brutal. And to follow that up with his wife then like challenging his masculinity and her identity, I do think that they had a good relationship. It's just she identified so strongly as the wife of a football star that when that was threatened, she challenges him the same way that the rest of the culture challenges him. It's such a fascinating look at masculinity in not just the sport, but in this country as a whole, that I really like that talking point. And I do like how he rises, like his whole arc in that final first half is kind of inspiring. And it does feel like, you know, Mufasa in some ways, just like doing everything that he can for like the people that he cares about at the cost of like what it's doing to him physically. But the way that that then inspires Willie because he sees the effort that Cap's given, but then how unfair it is to demand that from Cap because it's actually his health for a single game. But then James Wood's speech about everything to where like he's a piece of shit, but he's also making some points about the fact that this is what these guys sign up for. And right. I don't need to ask them because I know the answer. And it's like you have Shark contrasting Cap.
Right. Yeah. No. And again, like a lot of what you're saying, which is just what makes this movie so impressive, like it's saying a lot at once. Like there's so many talking points in what you just said. And the big centerpiece of it being just football as a sport, like what it does to the mind and the body and the kind of culture it inspires, like, you know, toxic masculinity. That was just one thing I really appreciate about this movie is the conversation in it felt so before its time. Like, I think a lot of those talking points is like very modern discussions that have gained traction recently, but like it's calling out like the brutal physical undertaking these guys, you know, take on in football. It's discussing like the kind of man you have to be in football. Like there's just an element of it that feels so penetrative into something very widespread and that signals the kind of culture we have and the kind of things we're still wrestling with and trying to fix and like just put less pressure on men to be men, like that kind of thing. It's just really cool how the movie's like handling all that again without being too obvious and like, oh, this is what the movie's saying. Like it's just kind of part of the movie's rhythm and DNA, you know. It just becomes part of these people's lives and we're just seeing it all play out.
Yep. What was the other thing that came up in there that I wanted to ask you about? I'm blanking at the moment, but what was just your favorite scene in general?
Man, favorite scene. I do think the jambalaya scene's pretty fantastic. I guess I would say just the whole last game is like such a great scene and how we transition from Cap to Willie Beeman and we're seeing that shift in the team together, like realizing that like it's time to step forward, like it's time for Willie to step up and like be the leader. Just all the dynamics coming together so seamlessly and effortlessly at the end and like finding resolve and catharsis. It was all just beautifully done. And again, the shot of that football flying at the camera. I mean, there's a few of those in that final game and I enjoyed watching that.
Yeah. The football flying towards the camera just always, always a beautiful thing?
I would watch football if that's the kind of angle I'm getting on the sport.
Yeah, if you watch the highlights sometimes.
I do mostly just watch highlights of sports. Baseball's the only, I don't watch a lot of baseball actually because I don't pay for it and I don't have time to watch it, but even like tennis, I'm like, I'm not going to sit down and watch a 3.5 hour tennis match. Like, I'll just watch the highlights on YouTube.
Yeah, for NFL games, I'll watch the Browns games, but I watch the like the 10 to 12 minute game recap on YouTube, which is really nice. And then for baseball, I have games on, but
yeah,
T-Mobile, you get MLB TV for free.
I think that's the beauty of baseball is you kind of can just have it on.
Yeah, yeah. any part of the movie you didn't like?
The only thing I wondered about that kind of struck me, and I don't even know if I necessarily think it's a bad part of the movie, but again, shocked that this woman smacks her husband across the face. But then the moment where he looks kind of shaken up on the field and she has a reaction to him of like, oh, like what happened? Like, I felt like something more should have happened there. Like they should have had like one more scene to get, like, I don't know what it was, but I was like, I feel like I need some sort of resolve between these two that completes a commentary that the movie has that never, it just never happens, you know?
Yeah, I can see that. I took it as her kind of having an awareness of just like, oh yeah, I did. I'm part of the problem. And like, he really was hurting, wasn't he? This wasn't just him. Like being afraid.
And I definitely think that's what it's conveying. I just like, I wanted more. Like I wanted it to hit a little harder.
Yeah. That's usually like my
I know.
My line.
That's what I thought. I was like, I feel like Chris is gonna have the same complaint. I don't know.
I don't mind it that much. I think with it being as much of a subplot as it is, that we get kind of the main beats that we need and can fill in the blanks on some of the rest.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That's
it's not a huge
how you
problem
feel.
To me.
Yeah, on the whole. Like, I was more shocked about the decline of Willie's relationship with Vanessa.
You didn't like that, you're saying?
It was just, like, so fast where they had been together what did she say, like, 6 or 7 years?
Right.
And that one fight, he just escalated. Like, the way that they start talking to each other.
Yeah,
that one fight, I'm like,
you cut into a fight pretty much.
Yeah, if I was like with somebody for 6 or 7 years, I don't think I would I could immediately start name calling the way that they were name calling each other.
Yeah, that was pretty surprising. But it's just to me the movie being efficient and like keeping things going.
Yeah. Yeah, I think my whole thing is just like how quick, especially in 1999, things moved for Willie, which I get, like, getting on the cover of a sports magazine, like, does it take long getting, like, a sponsorship, especially when you're in Miami and they had won the cup a few years before, or, like, the Super Bowl equivalent a few years before. So it's, like, a major market with, like, one of the top teams in the country. So I get why the attention would be as intense as it was, but it always feels like just a little quick.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I do really like is that this movie came out in 1999. Michael Vick didn't appear in the NFL until 2001.
Huh.
And before him, you didn't have like the Willie Beeman prototype. You had Randall Cunningham, who was a black quarterback who was very mobile and throwing and was kind of like electric on the field. But that was a lot of the like 80s and early 90s. So the kind of figure that Willie Beeman embodies,
yeah,
you don't see in the NFL. And yet this movie came out 2 years before Michael Vick then was Willie Beeman of the NFL. Coming in and having that electric play style, being able to run. I guess Cordell Stewart was a quarterback at that time and had some big run plays like this. So maybe that was a little bit of the impetus for it. It's funny how immediately after this movie, there was a shift in the NFL to quarterbacks like Michael Vick that were very mobile and could throw. And now we see that many of the best quarterbacks in the NFL are in this mobile style, whether it's, you know, Mahomes or I keep wanting to call him Jack Allen. Why am I blanking on his name? For the Bills. Allen for the Bills, or Lamar Jackson for the Ravens. Mm-hmm. It's like the Willie Beeman prototype has been proven in the NFL now, which is kind of cool to see.
Yeah. Yeah. It did also have that sense. Like there is a little bit of like 90s charisma, you know, of just the ego on him and like him like being in that music video and stuff. Like it felt of that era, but it also did feel ahead of its time and very modern, just in maybe it's just football specifically, but like the kind of athlete who like there's less focus on like tradition and like being like a certain way as a quarterback, you know, being like reserved and more of like showboating a little bit. It just felt very modern in a way that seems surprising for a 1999 release.
Yeah. I think that's the thing that always jumps out to me about this movie is just how predictive it was about where things would be at, not just in the NFL, but kind of in the country as a whole. It seemed Oliver Stone was just really like on it. And I guess John Logan helped write the screenplay too, which I don't know who John Logan is, but much respect to John Logan.
Yeah. He wrote Gladiator.
Oh, well, good on John Logan. It went Given Sunday to Gladiator.
Yeah. This movie's basically Gladiator.
Yeah, that's what I always say.
Yeah.
I mean, it is funny that he has that whole sequence about gladiators, and then the next movie he did was...
Guy likes gladiators.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't, right? You know? Don't we
That's all I could think in that moment. Because like that scene was happening and Lauren's like, do you know what movie this is? And I was like, Lauren, there are so many fucking like gladiator movies. Like it was a whole genre at one point and they made like a fuck ton of them. Like who knows what this movie is?
Yeah, I'm imagine if it's on TV, it might be one of the more famous examples, but I also have no idea. I've never seen like Spartacus or Ben-Hur.
I haven't either. I've never seen any of those movies.
Huh. Maybe that's one that we have to talk about at some point.
Maybe we just start a whole podcast with that theme.
The gladiators.
Pretty much every other genre is covered. We could do it.
It's about time, I say. It's about time. What else did he... He wrote Alien Covenant.
I'm a fan of this guy.
Spectre. The Aviator.
I do like Spectre. I've actually never seen The Aviator.
I have it either, actually.
Scorsese.
That guy. Who's heard of that guy? he also did Last Samurai.
I've seen that, but it's been a long time.
Yeah. I remember thinking it was better than I like feared it would be, but still also not like great. Okay. Oh, and Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, he's had quite the career.
Yeah. It's done a ton of stuff.
Those movies evoke a certain feel.
Yeah, good job. Okay. Any other talking points from this movie?
No. It's nice to see Cameron Diaz getting such a full character. Like, I think she's awesome, and she really owns this role, so that was nice.
Yeah, I feel like she's always in like pretty good movies, but never really gets to be... one of the best parts of the movie. I always think about like Gangs of New York and I'm like, she should have gotten to do more or been more, or just, it always felt like it was maybe a little like the character didn't get enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is still my favorite like role from her.
Yeah, she was great. Nice to see Dennis Quaid in another sports movie.
Did you tear up during the Life is a Game of Inches speech?
I didn't tear up, but I mean, it's Pacino. Weirdly, we've watched a few Pacino movies lately. I'm like, the main reason my wife wanted to watch this movie, I was like, I don't know, Al Pacino's in it. She's like, oh, she's like, all right, I want to watch that. And it's just so funny to see him in this role. Like, this is only a few years after he won the Academy Award. Like, he's in his prime.
Yeah, it's funny just the casualness with which he gives that speech, but the honesty and the difference between his earlier speech, where he's just kind of going through the motions, and Beeman calls him out on it, right? I've heard that same speech, you know, 1,000 times, and then he finally is vulnerable with the players and makes them feel something in a way that they hadn't, which is the payoff that everybody had been yelling at him about. Like, you've given up, you're not fighting anymore. Right. And so when he's finally honest about himself and honest to them, we see the way in which he connects with them. And that's cool. I love that speech.
Yeah. I just don't know how Al Pacino has the energy to keep acting the way he does. Like, my God.
It's funny because in the movie, they make such a point about him being old. And it's like, that was
25
years ago.
Crazy.
So he's still acting in movies now?
Even back then, I was like, I don't think I would have the energy to do any of this.
I know. Yet there he was.
Yeah, everybody's great right now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad you liked it. And I'm glad that my like Travis barometer was correct in being like, there's no way that he does.
Sometimes it's a little off, but today you did good.
Thank you. Well, should we rank them?
Yeah. So I have it in the very good category. It's pretty near movies we've done recently. Like, it's a little above American Psycho. It's like in that region. But like American Psycho, I think it's the kind of movie where like I really, really liked it, and maybe with one more watch it would kind of catapult into like the next category, like the movies I kind of view as like essential in my life, but it's not quite there for me yet. So I have it, where does it rank here? And where it's ranked too, like it's ranked amongst movies I really like. I have it ranked number 162 out of, and I watched a lot of movies this weekend, so I'm up to 556 movies.
Jesus.
I was in a hotel room with my wife. We spent a lot of time in the hotel room. We had a little like mini vacation and we were just watching whatever was on HBO. So
nice.
I got a lot done movie-wise.
There was part of me, I was like, it won't, but there was a part of me that was like, could this actually end up just in Travis's top 25?
Elements of it, like, again, you know, it feels like Magnolia to me, and Magnolia is one of my favorite movies ever. Like, I could see that happening if it hits me at a specific beat in my life, you know?
Yeah.
But I still really loved it. I have it at 162. Above it are Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. I love that movie. Then Lionheart, the Jean-Claude Van Damme. I was about to say it's the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie where he enters a fighting tournament, but that describes like five of his movies. But it's one of those five movies. I love that movie. It's probably my favorite JCVD movie. Then Any Given Sunday. Then Shadow of a Doubt. Hitchcock, that's good company. And then Stop Making Sense, the Talking Heads concert movie that I watched recently in theaters and had an absolute joy watching.
I did not expect to find a concert movie on this list.
One of the best concert movies ever.
Damn. I have Any Given Sunday in the My Favorites tier. So it's a top tier movie for me.
Yeah.
And it's joined by other movies like, you know, Past Lives, Fight Club, Bo is Afraid is in there, which I know isn't everybody's cup of tea, but it's one of my favorites. Man. I'm looking at Triangle of Sadness being in there, and I think I might bump Triangle of Sadness down.
Okay. Movie we've covered on the show.
Yeah. So that's going down a tier to just the wow category.
Wow, a live shift in the rankings. This is exciting.
I know. So pardon? I currently have 20 movies in my favorites.
Nice. Part of me wants, I mean, I'm not sitting here picking it as our next movie or anything, but part of me wants to watch Bo is Afraid because I found out everyone doesn't like it.
Yeah, they hate it.
And I saw some article, like, it was so sad. Like, Ari Aster's just, like, sad people don't like his movie. Which I was kind of like, I kind of want to watch it now. Like, you know, I think he seems smart. He seems capable. I just haven't liked his movie so far. But maybe Beau's Afraid is good.
I would love to rewatch Beau's Afraid. So if you do want to pick that, I'm down.
It's not the next movie, but maybe down the line.
Okay, okay. So what's the next one then?
Well, you know, Dune Part 2 is coming out soon. And I'm feeling the Dune fever. So we are going to watch Dune. But no, not Denis Villeneuve's Dune. David Lynch's Dune.
Okay, we're watching Lynch's Dune.
And I'm very excited to do that because I want to write about the movie. So I use this as an excuse to watch it. And I fully expect this to be a contentious episode. So I feel like it's been a while since we've had one of those, and that'll be fun.
Yeah, I've never seen it, so we'll have the inverse experience.
I don't know how you'll feel about it, but if I love it, I absolutely love this movie. So it's tough for me to hear like anything negative about it.
All right, perfect. I'm gonna
and I loathe the new Dune, so that's gonna be part of it.
Even if I like it, I'm gonna be like, Travis,
go for it. I welcome.
What was this doing? And you'll be like, it's doing everything it should.
And I'm just going to be like, I don't know, but it was cool.
All right. Perfect.
All right. Here we are at the end. We're going to do the thing that we always do at the end of a show. Right?
Yeah, I'm yeah. ready.
I need some enthusiasm for you from you about this part.
I dread it.
I know. I need you to fake it.
All right, all right, all right. Let's go, let's go, let's go. Go team, go team, go team.
Don't force it. All right, here we go. Lights?
Camera?
See ya.
See ya.
Yeah. I don't know anymore.
No, that was great. That was great. That was good.